Hello, and welcome to On Sacred Ground on the LNC Radio Network on Blog Talk Radio, broadcasting the voices of the land and of the dead by weaving together history, ethnography, and spiritual experience. I'm your host, Kai Armand, and if you're tuning in online and having technical issues, remember that you can listen into the show by calling in via your phone or Skype to 657-383-0525. To those of you who are listening live and are in the chat room at blogtalkradio.com, welcome and thanks for tuning in. This is our second episode of On Sacred Ground, and it is another 60-minute broadcast airing live at 3 p.m. Eastern, 12 p.m. Pacific on this, December 27th, 2014. In this episode, we zoom into present-day Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota in the United States of the North American continent, also known as Turtle Island by some American Indian peoples. But we begin today with a personal anecdote. During my early 20s, I had a dream that I would never forget. In it, I was sitting across from an American Indian woman in a covered wagon that I knew was heading eastward, but it had the fervency and pioneer spirit that multitudes of white American settlers had while heading west throughout the 1800s. The woman before me unfurled a map of the United States, split into territories instead of states. With her finger, she pointed to a pine tree in the area of what is now present-day Tennessee, which sprang upwards out of the map before she placed it beside her. In this dream, I suddenly grew very tired, and I retired to a quote-unquote back room in the wagon, in which an American Indian chief and many American Indian children slept. When I awoke and entered the first room that I had been in before, the chief stopped me, saying that the way I'd awoken was so funny, and that I had to wake the children up that way. So I put on a large skirt, and I danced. And the children awoke, rubbing their eyes, laughing. The dream then cut to a modern, metal, chrome kitchen with high ceilings and a line of American Indian people before me, with me wielding a butcher knife, slitting their throats one by one, and laying them in a heap on a bed. The action was botched on the last person in the line, a young woman who began to gurgle blood. Since my intention wasn't to harm, simply to do what it is that I was doing, I cut her more deeply and added her body, too, to my knees at the edge of the pile and wept. And I awoke in my own bed with tears streaming down my face. For years, I wondered what that dream meant, having only a vague understanding of my own American Indian ancestry and almost zero understanding of this dream's symbolic language. It would be about half a decade later, while researching for a play I'd already written half of and was about to direct, that I realized I actually had lived into that dream. The play was a piece of historical fiction chronicling the life of a Lakota Winte, third gender person, in the 2 weeks leading up to the Wounded Knee Massacre. And it was a line in the book Black Elk Speaks, in which the famed Indian prophet, written by the famed Indian prophet, in which he mentions the butchering of the Lakota at a place called Wounded Knee in the year 1890, it was this line that triggered this realization. The memory of a dream, of a nightmare. In our world, people are desperate for visions, but we have little understanding as a culture of what it means to receive one. For one, visions can be very inconvenient. Father Sitting Bull of the Lakota himself received a vision that he would die at the hands of his own people. And he did indeed, at the hands of an Indian police officer on December 15th, 1890. As a contemporary person with some experience in the field of visions, I can assure you that the places from which they come aren't going to make you have enough sick days and vacation days for receiving and processing them. The issue is that we are being bombarded with the power of vision all the time, but don't realize how much of our own stuff gets in the way. Our expectations, our hurts and dramas, our fears of who we would have to be were we to not only receive a vision, but to pick it up and run with it. I think there's more to the dream that I had all those years ago than I know still. For instance, that whole part about the pine tree in Tennessee, I'm still not sure what that was all about.
Tennessee.
Lord, I've really been real stressed, down and out, losing ground. Although I am black and brown, problems got me pessimistic. Brothers and sisters keep messing up. Why does it have to be so damn tough? I don't know where I can go to let these ghosts out of my skull. My grandma passed, my brother's gone. I never at once felt so alone. I know you're supposed to be my steering wheel, not just my spare tire. My God, he forced the truth. For some strange reason, it had to be. He guided me to Tennessee.
A game of horseshoes.
Now I see the importance of history. While my people be in the mess that they be. Many journeys to freedom made in vain by brothers on the corner playing ghetto games. I ask you, Lord, why you enlighten me without the enlightenment of all my folks. He said, cause I set myself on a quest for truth, and he was there to quench my thirst. But I am still thirsty. Lord, allow me to drink some more. He said, what I am searching for are the answers to all which are in front of me. The ultimate truth started to get blurry. Some strange reason it had to be. It was all a dream about Tennessee.
Won't you help me understand? from a director named Ingmar Bergman. Often to be most eloquent is to be silent.
You're quite right. The film we've just seen has said it all. I think we should say that those nominated for the best performance by an actor are...
Marlon Brando in The Godfather.
Michael Caine in Sleuth.
Laurence Olivier in Sleuth.
Peter O'Toole in The Ruling Class.
Paul Winfield in Sounder. The winner is... Marlon Brando in The Godfather.
Accepting the award for Marlon Brando in The Godfather, Miss Kathleen Littlefeather.
My name is Sasheen Littlefeather. I'm Apache, and I'm president of the National Native American Affirmative Image Committee. I'm representing Marlon Brando this evening, and he has asked me to tell you in a very long speech, which I cannot share with you presently because of time, but I will be glad to share with the press afterwards, that he very regretfully cannot accept this very generous award. And the reasons for this being are the treatment of American Indians today by the film industry. Excuse me. And on television, in movie reruns, and also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee. I beg at this time that I have not intruded upon this evening, and that we will, in the future, our hearts and our understandings will meet with love and generosity. Thank you on behalf of Marlon Brando.
There was an audio clip from the 45th Academy Awards Ceremony, 27, 1973, at the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion in Los Angeles, California. Actor Marlon Brando, acting in solidarity with the American Indian Movement, 200 of whose members were occupying the town of Wounded Knee on Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota, had requested that a representative of the organization be sent to the award ceremony in his place. Miss Sasheen Littlefeather, of Apache descent and clad in traditional Apache attire, had brought a 15-minute speech written up by Mr. Brando, but was threatened with arrest by the ceremony's producer if she spoke for more than 60 seconds. Part of the reason for the occupation was a protest against the United States' failure to fulfill treaties with the American Indian people, dating back to the founding of the country. In particular, with the 19th century treaties that stated that the Black Hills, a sacred site to the Lakota people, would forever remain untouched, to be horribly broken shortly thereafter when miners were allowed to pillage the site for gold, culminating in part in the Battle of the Little Bighorn in 1876, known also as Custer's Last Stand, at which Sitting Bull was present. Though a victory for the Lakota, less than 14 years later, the last free-roaming indigenous people on the American continent would be penned onto reservations throughout North and South Dakota, Pine Ridge Reservation being one of them. And on December 29th, 1890, nearly 300 unarmed Oglala Lakota would be massacred by U.S. forces, their bodies dumped in a mass grave following government and public hysteria regarding the widespreading pan-tribal ghost dance, a fervent, visionary dance of hope in the face of what people experienced as a terrifying apocalypse. The ghost dance was given through prophecy by a Paiute medicine man named Wovoka, who said he'd received the ghost dance in a vision during a solar eclipse on January 1st, 1889. The dance attracted so much attention. And though it might have been something of a spectacle to see crowds of people praying fervently for salvation and for the end of their pain and suffering, the spectacle was made even more of a spectacle by newspapers and speakers at the time, turning the U.S. government into a paranoid mess regarding the people that they had penned in on reservation. Reading from a first-person eyewitness account of the ghost dance ritual, I have an excerpt here that gives us some idea of what this ritual looked like. As the crowd gathered about the tree, the high priest or master of ceremonies began his address, giving them directions as to the chant and other matters. After he had spoken for about 15 minutes, they arose and formed in a circle. As nearly as I could count, there were between 300 and 400 persons. One stood directly behind another, each with his hands on his neighbor's shoulders. After walking about a few times, chanting, "Father, I come," they stopped marching, but remained in the circle, and set up the most fearful, heart-piercing wails I ever heard, crying, moaning, groaning, and shrieking out their grief, and naming over their departed friends and relatives, at the same time kicking up handfuls of dust at their feet, washing their hands in it and throwing it over their heads. Finally, they raised their eyes to heaven, their hands clasped high above their heads, and stood straight and perfectly still, invoking the power of the Great Spirit to allow them to see and talk with the people who had died. This ceremony lasted about 15 minutes, when they all sat down where they were and listened to another address. When they arose again, they enlarged the circle by facing toward the center, taking hold of hands and moving around in the manner of schoolchildren in their play of needle's eye. And now the most intense excitement began. They would go as fast as they could, their hands moving from side to side, their bodies swaying, their arms with hands gripped tightly in their neighbors, swinging back and forth with all their might. If one, more weak and frail, came near falling, he would be jerked up and into motion until tired nature gave way. The ground had been worked and worn by many feet until the fine, flower-like dust lay light and loose to the depth of 3 or 2 inches. The wind, which had increased, would sometimes take it up, enveloping the dancers and hiding them from view. From the beginning, they chanted to a monotonous tune the words, "Father, I come. Mother, I come. Brother, I come. Father, give us back our arrows."
I saw them lying stacked high on shelves, cardboard boxed and labeled. A skeleton mother holds her embedded child. Uncovered, no blankets, no nothing, just how I was looking at myself buried alive. Terry donation, government research, science, churches and museums. I was looking at myself buried alive. I am my ancestors, my mother's stolen grave. Wipe my face from the right to live on this land. Creation came, you still take, 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 you still take. Sterilized women who cannot give birth, strip mine the womb of mother earth, remove my
future, leaving no trace to say that I'm a non-existent ray. Well, I cannot claim from where I came. You hear the truth, no guilt, no shame. I cannot claim from where I came. You hear the truth, no guilt, no shame. Exploitation and apology. Exhalation, you call it state property. A professional living, how can money justify the greed? To disguise what is truly just.
Are listening to another fine production of the LMC Radio Network, whose art and information may be found on its webcast shows. The LMC Radio Network is a community radio alliance of metaphysical, spiritual, inspirational, and poetical justice broadcasters spanning a wide range of topics. Tune in Sundays for the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour, hosted by Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman Ollie. It features panel discussions on traditional African-American hoodoo spellcasting with members of the Association of Independent Readers and Rootworkers, plus free readings and magical rootwork advice for live call-in clients. This is the longest-running Conjure show on radio and may be heard from 3 o'clock to 4:30 Pacific Time Sunday afternoons. On Mondays, get ready for Candelo's Corner, starring Candelo Cambisa and Ancestor Healing. This is the voice of authentic Cuban Palo and Dominican Sanse in the United States, welcoming special guests representing the entire range of African traditional and diasporic traditional religions. You can hear Candela's Corner Monday evenings from 5 to 7 Pacific Time. On Tuesdays, a pair of outstanding hosts point the way to essential values. First, on the Crystal Silence League Hour, John St. Germain provides spiritual guidance in the practical use of crystals and crystal balls for the development of mental concentration, mind power, divination, and telepathic communication. His show airs Tuesday evenings from 5 to 6 o'clock Pacific Time. Once you have your bearings, engage in activism and social justice in the streets with Beverly Smith. Beverly brings listeners front-page reports on the ongoing struggle for racial, gender, and social justice, shedding much light on civil and social rights issues. Her cry for freedom begins at 6 p.m. Pacific Time and inspires us for 1 hour. On Wednesdays, Andrea Weston's Liquid Libations pour forth to bless us with poetry, short stories, and spoken word performances. If you are a poet or someone who simply enjoys the beauty and power of words, then Liquid Libations welcomes your participation. Call in and read your work. Listen for Liquid Libations on Wednesdays from 5 to 6:30 Pacific Time. And on Thursdays, from deep in the heart of Texas, where the stars at night are big and bright, there to school you so no one can fool you, it's the Now You Know Show with Professor Porterfield. In a variety show laced with country wit and biblical wisdom, the silver-tongued professor shares his knowledge of roots and delivers the lucky numbers. From 6 to 7:30 Pacific Time, there's no end to the surprises. All the shows on the LMC Radio Network are sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company, located in beautiful Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com. Add 3 hours for Eastern. Tax and license may apply. Train departure times and Burma Shave signs subject to change without notice. LMC.
Hello and welcome back to On Sacred Ground on the LMC Radio Network on Blog Talk Radio, broadcasting the voices of the land and of the dead by weaving together history, ethnography, and spiritual experience. I'm your host, Kai Armand, and if you're just tuning in online and finding yourself having some technical issues, remember that you can listen to this show by calling in via your phone or Skype to 657-383-0525. Today, we are talking about Wounded Knee. We're talking about Wounded Knee in 1890. We're talking about Wounded Knee in 1973. We're also talking about Wounded Knee in 2014. The past is the present. And this will not be the only show with Wounded Knee as a focus, as land rights over the site specifically and American Indian sovereignty in general continue to be a concern, with the former cropping up in mainstream news media every now and again, most recently with claims that actor Johnny Depp would be purchasing the site from a non-Indigenous landowner eager to sell it in 2013. Quoting from an Indian Country Today Media Network article published in July 2013, Depp said, "It's very sacred ground, and many atrocities were committed against the Sioux there. And in the 1970s, there was a standoff between the feds and the people who should own that land," Depp told the Daily Mail. "This historical land is so important to the Sioux culture, and all I want to do is buy it and give it back. Why doesn't the government do that?" End quote. Listeners, if you want to understand America, you have to understand the complexities of the 19th century. The 1800s here in America, at the crossroads of slavery, mass immigration, genocide, and urbanization, is like no other time or place. The West, which was a series created by filmmaker Ken Burns, is very long, but incredibly superb viewing that I recommend to anyone who will hear me to watch. And if the Midwest is the beloved heartland of America, Wounded Knee, the plight of the Lakota people, and the trail of broken treaties our country engaged in with them is indeed the festering wound in our nation's heart, a wound that is not going away until we actually look at it. Pine Ridge Reservation is, statistically, a third-world country right in the heart of America, and it's the size of the state of Connecticut. As of 2007, the unemployment rate is 80 to 90%. The alcoholism rate is estimated to be 80%. Teen suicide is 4 times the national average, and life expectancy is second lowest in the Western Hemisphere, second only to Haiti. These are statistics that I've pulled from the website of remember.org, that's re-member.org, which is a nonprofit organization that works with the Oglala Lakota Nation on the Pine Ridge Reservation that seeks to improve the quality of reservation life through relationships, shared resources, and volunteer services. They also offer incredible cultural immersion volunteer trips, which I had the great privilege of participating in while researching the play that I was writing back in college. I went there not only to become more familiar with the Lakota people and with Lakota culture and the history that my production would be speaking to, but because I knew that in order to do justice to this work, or at least try my best to do justice to this work, I needed a visceral in-person experience with the land, which, as an Eastern-raised person who often proclaims the great beauty of the ocean that I've always had access to, is something entirely different and entirely beautiful. The way the sun sets on the Midwestern plains is something to behold. Created rock formations of the Badlands, underwater millions of years ago, are both eerie and majestic. To write about a culture which was not my own was terrifying, especially while attending a very social justice-oriented school at which the term appropriation was used quite often to describe clothing trends, Halloween costume choices, and hairstyles. I was in a very contentious position. Having really received this play, I felt, almost scene for scene, but knowing that that wasn't enough. How could I tell this story? How could I do justice to this history through my own creative means as best as I could? Did I need permission? If so, who would give it to me? Going to the land and meeting the people was a good decision. But not everyone I told about the project was happy about it. But I did meet a woman selling medicine bags by the Wounded Knee Massacre site and mass grave. I don't know how I found the time to share why I was there, but she nodded and was appreciative of my presence, and her husband came to my camp later in the night with a red stone for the red road, he said, that he'd picked up for me from the grave itself to place in the medicine bag I'd bought from her, which had become the primary talisman for my writing and directing the play over the next few months. She also shared some lore with me regarding the two-spirit gender role of the Winte, which she'd learned from her mother after telling her about my project, lore that I don't believe had ever been recorded as I scoured every book in the Five College Consortium of Massachusetts for what I could find on indigenous gender roles. She nonchalantly included me in that category of almost forgotten people with unique ways of being who could sing with my brother sisters to make storms turn from the encampment. It was a short conversation, but in it, she'd welcomed me home.
The names of the faces have been silenced and erased from history's recorded time and place. As we step back through our ancestors' paths, through the womb, the trees, the rivers, the sacred fire, we find that the land and the people are one and the same, and that the spirit and blood of our ancestors are within us and shall never.
I'm going home, going home. North Carolina is crying in my soul. Creator, I'm reaching out to
reaching out.
Lucky Mojo Curio Company provides time-honored and traditional hoodoo spiritual supplies for remediation of all types of conditions. Located in the sunny Forestville, California, you can visit them in person and get to see the world's smallest church, Missionary Independent Spiritual Church, as well as all of the fine, helpful workers who are there. Or you can visit them online at luckymojo.com. In the introduction to the 1994 edition of his book, God is Red, A Native View of Religion, author, lawyer, historian, activist, and theologian Vine Deloria Jr. of Standing Rock Sioux Heritage writes, "When I was a boy, I often accompanied my father on trips to the different Sioux reservations in South Dakota. During these trips, he would point out various features of the landscape and tell me the names and stories associated with them. Regrettably, I can only remember a few of the places today, but indelibly imprinted on my mind was the fact that the Sioux people cherished their lands and treated them as if they were people who shared a common history with humans. In 1972, when I was writing the first version of this book, I sought to emphasize the role that spaces and places play in our human religious perceptions. From the invasion and occupation of Alcatraz in 1969 to the occupation at Wounded Knee in 1973, I felt that the various Indian protests had a much deeper meaning than simply securing additional lands for reservations. At the bottom of everything, I believed then and continue to believe, is a religious view of the world that seeks to locate our species within the fabric of a life that constitutes the natural world, the land and all its various life forms. As long as Indians exist, there will be conflict between the tribes and any group that carelessly despoils the land and the life it supports. At the deepest philosophical level, our universe must have as a structure a set of relationships in which all entities participate. Within the physical world, this universal structure can best be understood as a recognition of the sacredness of places." This has been our first episode looking at a specific place on Earth that holds a sense of sacredness, a sense of sacredness forged by the indigenous people who held it close to their hearts, a sense of sacredness forged later through tragedy caused through greed and broken treaties. It's my intention to have Lakota guests on future episodes as we continue to hold this site and these people in our hearts and minds, knowing that justice for them means justice for all of us. And my hope is that they can give us some insight into what we can do in our world and in our own lives to counter these injustices that continue to go unresolved and unacknowledged. Until then, and until we have such guests who can give us an insider view, donations are accepted at re-member.org, which go toward construction supplies, especially on the Pine Ridge Reservation, for homes that are in dire need of repair and accessibility accommodations. Every year, Lakota people die having frozen to death on Pine Ridge Reservation. And knowing that your donations will go to an organization that is especially committed to ensuring that homes are built and insulated, is one way of knowing that you are participating directly in saving people's lives. But all is, of course, not lost, and all is, of course, not up to us listeners and non-Lakota peoples. Because for years now, there have been people who have been thoroughly engaged in Lakota language preservation and teaching Lakota, which had been banned for decades from being spoken, especially in Indian boarding schools, to the younger generations that are coming up today. And cultural traditions and performances are also being revived and taught to people. And young Lakota have also been very much inspired by the hip-hop culture of African Americans in the United States, going on to create their own work to inspire their peers and generations that are coming after them to continue being who they are and to find pride in their history and who they are. And if there's an opportunity for us to join hands with the Lakota people, again, remembering that justice for them means justice for all of us, then I say, let's join them. This has been another episode of On Sacred Ground with your host, Kai Armand. Tune in next week as we continue to go deep into the heart of the human experience, in which place plays a primary role. Until then, Happy New Year. And keep a light in your window for the Lakota people and for courage in our times. I'll definitely be keeping a light in mine.